Today's program was brought to you by Mood Magazine, a new international quarterly publication about music and food. For more information, visit moodmusicfood.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte, and I'm very happy to have a new friend of mine, Katie Parla. She is an awesome, awesome lady so far since we've been talking before the show. From your bio and everything else that I've read about you, you're just kind of all over the place like I am.
It's good times.
You are an expert in Roman and Sicilian cooking and beverages, and not to mention a sommelier and a writer and an educator. God, you're doing a lot of stuff.
The good news is writing and booze go together perfectly.
They do.
It's an ideal pairing.
Yeah. Always. I mean, definitely not reading, but writing.
Yeah. The writing with the booze is good. The editing with the booze is really bad.
Right, right.
You just got to prioritize.
Yeah, exactly. So you live in Rome now.
Yeah.
For a while.
For 11 years. I've been rounding up for like some time now.
Yeah. And you're
almost 11.
That's awesome. I haven't even lived in New York that long. But you actually are from around here. You're from New Jersey, right?
I'm from the Garden State, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Fantastic.
It's crazy. I've always dreamed about living abroad, but,
I thought you were going to say you always dreamed about living in New Jersey, and it's so doable, and I can give you some advice on my mother's in real estate.
That is abroad. It's across the water.
It's true. It's foreign.
Yeah. So how did you get started with all this? I mean, you were saying before that your dad owned a bar, and like you kind of grew up with it.
Yeah, so I moved to Rome for completely non-food and beverage-oriented reasons, but stuck around for those, you know, very items. And I grew up in a restaurant family. My dad owns a bar. I mean, he's got a restaurant called Clyde's in New Brunswick, and they're very famous for their, like, cocktails. So I grew up pouring cocktails and trying to, you know, just sort of learn all the liquors that I could and learn all the cocktails, and eventually move from, like, bar back to bartender. And then I went to Italy, and I was like, oh, there are no cocktails here. This kind of sucks. which isn't actually true. You know, when I moved to Rome 11 years ago, there was definitely this aperitivo culture.
Sure.
Aperitivo is sort of like the Roman or the Italian word for happy hour, where you go out and you eat for like maybe 8 or 10 euros, a huge carb-driven buffet with lots of airborne bacteria, and then you get a cocktail with it. So the cocktail is really the afterthought. And it's generally a watered-down spritz or a completely undrinkable, totally unbalanced mojito. Two things that I probably wouldn't drink either of those if you put a gun to my head. I'd be hard-pressed to do that. But things are changing. I mean, it's taken maybe decades, like it's been half a century since Rome's really had an important cocktail culture to speak of. But it's nice that now people are drinking for the sake of drinking, rather than drinking for the sake of getting a huge buffet that fills them up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you could say the same thing of, you know, the United States, anywhere in the world, but as far as, like, cocktail culture and having an important cocktail program, it has been decades and decades and decades since anyone's actually cared about it, and we're very lucky to be living in a time where we can make our careers out of it, and we can enjoy the cocktails and, like, educate people and just have fun with it.
Absolutely.
Because, you know? One of my favorite things about, I mean, like, the whole reason why I got into like the world of cocktails was going to my favorite bar in my neighborhood back in Oklahoma. And like, you know, there wasn't really a cocktail scene back then, but I loved the food there. And I was like, man, I wish I could get like a nice Manhattan or something like that. And it just didn't happen. So that kind of like drove me to, I ended up working at that bar. And I was like,
you had to make it yourself.
There. Yeah. And made it myself. And
I so get that. Like I went to if you just randomly go anywhere in Rome for like food or drink, mm-hmm. you're bound to be disappointed. So I went to a friend's like art opening and I ordered a Manhattan and I was like, I don't believe that you heard me correctly when I ordered this. This tastes like fruit punch and cough syrup. Like is like, what planet are we on? And unfortunately that's the way that it is. But because cocktails in Rome are sort of seen as something that you just sort of like whip together and not something to have pride in or to even think of ingredients, super common, which is why it's so great that there are places that have opened in the past, you know, year, year and a half, like the Gin Corner or Barnum Cafe, where there are people behind the bar who care about you coming back, even if you're not coming back, even if you're a tourist, they want you to have a really good experience. Mm-hmm. And they are dedicated to making delicious things. But they're doing it in a context really much different than how Romans drink, how Italians drink. Italians drink wine and beer with food. So cocktails, because they would be consumed in sort of an external context, right, before a meal or after a meal, don't really fall into that sort of habitual, traditional consumption pattern. And, you know, my favorite place to drink in Rome is Barnum Cafe, where there's this, like, Irish-Italian guy behind the bar. And he's traveled and he's seen the world and knows flavors and things and is still, like, hard-pressed to get all the Italians that come in to drink anything but an industrial beer or, like, bad red wine.
Hmm.
So it's wonderful that there are visitors to Rome or sort of cocktail geeks in Rome that are drawn to his place, which is, you know, a fantastic little space on Via del Pellegrino in the center of Rome.
Nice. I mean, but don't you think that that comes along with, like we were saying before, like the education? It's like we have so many publications now that are focused not only on the food side of it, but now, you know, even like wine enthusiast, it's been around forever. You know, now it's kind of like one of those magazines that's really come back into its own and also started promoting cocktails as well and spirits. That goes with, you know, even like Bon Appetit and Savour, and like those magazines started focusing more and more on cocktails over the past, you know, 8-10 years. Then, of course, you have new publications like Imbibe, newer mm-hmm. publications like Imbibe and
Punch, for Punch example, is which is coming out.
Yep. Actually, Leslie's supposed to be on the show next week.
Fantastic. Yep. Yay.
And so, and that's not to mention the thousands of online publications to go with that.
Okay, so this is a really good point you're making. In order to follow all those things, you have to speak English and know English and sort of be traveling and tasting things and like get it. And that isn't really the case for a lot of people who are in the food and beverage industry in Rome. When I was on Linda Palacio's show in June, we touched on this. I mean, simply in order to understand flavors fully, you have to enjoy traveling to taste things that you have never tasted before or confront things.
Oh, yeah.
It's so necessary.
You have to taste everything.
Which is why the great bartenders in Rome have traveled. They've lived abroad and know other languages. And they really engage with their customers in a very, like, decidedly, like, North American way, which is absent from some of the other cocktail bars where you're just sort of mistreated because you're a nuisance.
Right.
So if you want to educate people, you sort of have to do, like, one drinker at a time. And
And, you know, that's great customer service as well, though.
It's so essential. I mean, growing up in this restaurant and bar family, like, the customer is the most important element of that. You can do anything you want. You can make the best drinks in the world, but if you mistreat the people who are drinking them, they probably won't come back, and then you have to close, and you can't do your awesome things anymore.
Yeah.
Sort of science. Economics. One of the two subjects. In a lot of places in Rome, these great cocktail programs are also present in the same place where you have, like, cheap industrial, like, wines and lagers. So there's that real separation of sort of craft cocktail existence and then sort of mass consumption. But it's, as I mentioned, it's changing. And this guy, Patrick Pistolesi, who works at Barnum Cafe, just opened the Gin Corner in June. And it's the first gin bar in Italy. Gin is something that Italians drink in their cocktails, but there's never been a place that's been dedicated to gin before. So I think also choosing a specific spirit and sticking to that and celebrating that is shocking and amazing.
Yeah. Especially for one of the most famous gin cocktails in history, the Negroni, coming from Italy. You know, it's like, wow, it's surprising that that hasn't happened yet. But, I mean, it's also, I don't know, especially like you said, the lack of consumer education in Rome, like you were saying, it's not necessarily the lack of, it's just like the traditions of the way that you'd eat and drink and also just not even the bartender education, really, because it all starts with, like, the bartender.
Totally, totally.
The person at the shop selling the stuff.
And we do have a really important movement in Rome that's led by the Jerry Thomas Project, which is a small sort of speakeasy style, one-room place with a bar in the historical center. And in addition to serving drinks, I think it's Tuesday to Saturday or Tuesday to Sunday, they also train bartenders. In the past couple of years, the people that have trained there have opened their own places. So there is this growth that is certainly tangible, which is fantastic for anyone who likes a good cocktail.
Nice. I just out of curiosity, I was just wondering about, like, we were talking about the gin bar, and you're saying that it has like about 80 bottles of gin from all over the place. I was just, they brought up a question in my mind. What is the actual like alcohol distribution like there as far as like the variety of products that you can get?
What you can or can't get?
Can get from like around the rest of the world, because there's so many obscure, like here, like we love obscure Italian liquor products.
Okay, this is a great question. So I just recently, my lovely friend Daphne from Slow Food Istanbul said, can you please bring me Carpano Antica? We can't get it in Turkey. I'm like, of course I can. I'm sure that'll be really easy to find in Rome. No.
No?
Absolutely not. There are two places that have it in stock, which doesn't mean that it's so in demand that it's sold out. They're just two places that believe it's worthy of being stocked. Costantini, which is this fantastic like temple to all types of booze, and it's wonderful. And Italy, which is something else. So I think that's really telling. You do find in Rome, but also in Istanbul, where I spent a lot of time, the cocktail culture, the availability of spirits is really dominated by the industrial brands, because you need to educate your drinker in order to sell them something that's a little bit obscure from their point of view. So yeah, those all those happy hours have a lot of like Smirnoff and all sorts of like Cuervo garbage being poured, and it's unfortunate, but it's a fact. But thankfully people are sort of fighting against this trend.
But if Smirnoff or Cuervo want to sponsor our show,
of course. I wasn't being I wasn't using pejorative language, was I? No, never. I never do that.
Never. Yeah, you know, to me it's like two of the bars that I help manage are Italian, and so two things, two parts here. I want to make great cocktails for them, but I also want to use unique ingredients, because that's the, like, when I go to a place, I look at the cocktail list, and the first drink that I order, or pretty much every drink that I order, is the one that has the weird ingredient that I'm like, oh, I can't believe they're using that here. And especially us being Italians, like, we're always like kind of wanting to like, you know, smuggle back like rare Amari that you can't get here. You know, different kinds of liqueurs that are...
New York probably has more Amari readily available than
you think so?
Than Rome most times. Yeah, I would say so.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Well, Amaro is consumed so much differently here than it is in Italy. And now I think because the Italian peninsula and its islands have become a bit more cosmopolitan, in the sense that you can find things from other regions... You find on the digestive liqueur menu, grappa and limoncello and amaro, even though these things used to just be super regional. But again, they're connected. They're totally tied to food. And at the gin corner at Barnum Cafe at the Charing Thomas Project, they don't serve food. Well, Barnum does serve food, but it's not necessarily part of your experience there.
Yeah.
So if you're drinking a high alcohol spirit, a distilled beverage of some sort, it's because you are desperate to digest after having a massive meal. That's the ritual. That's the tradition. And I would say 95% of places in Rome don't have anything resembling like even a marginally stocked bar.
Yeah.
So if you ask for like even a simple like vodka soda, you're out of luck.
Oh, man. it's crazy even thinking about that, you know, especially like living in the city, like kind of being jaded a little bit, you know, as far as the world.
Yeah, you're spoiled. Sorry, New York is one of the best places on the planet to drink. Travel, again, is like super important. And that's why a lot of the bartenders, not just in Rome, but in all of Italy, that are really succeeding and doing interesting things have spent time abroad. And there is this massive economic recession here and in Rome. And so people leave. They go to London. They learn cocktails. They study in cocktail programs. And it's something that they're really dedicated to reproducing in Italy. But they make it for an Italian audience.
Yeah.
So something that's not... you know, perhaps as creative as what you find in London or New York, but it's certainly like a tangible improvement to what we had before.
Nice. Well, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking about the Roman cocktail scene with Katie Parler. Back in a few.
Whoa, oh, oh, oh. Whoa, oh, oh, oh. Whoa, oh, oh, oh.
What's Mood? Mood is a quarterly magazine about music and food. For its creators, not many things can beat a good record and a delicious meal. Maybe a well-written story or a gorgeous photo. Well, that's all in Mood. The magazine looks at music and food in a cohesive and unique way, with a keen eye to design and high-quality writing. Its contributors are located around the globe, and the stories span accordingly. Check it out today at moodmusicfood.com. That's moodmusicfood.com.
And we're back. You've been listening to The Speakeasy with Katie Parla today. We've been talking about the Roman cocktail scene and just the lack of kind of like a lot of the interesting ingredients that we're so fortunate to have in many other places around the world to get to play around with. And, you know, with all those different ingredients, it's so much easier to like get, you know, the food pairing down. So we've always kind of done it here, you know. I mean, I will say that like one of my bars at Prime Eats, like people don't do the traditional thing of like having a cocktail before and one after, maybe a little bit in between during the meal. They'll just drink cocktails straight through the meal. But I feel like that's a very American thing in general.
It's a totally American thing, and I do it every time I come to New York, and I thank you for that.
Awesome.
Complimenti, as we say in Italian. Well,
you have to come on. So on that note, we were talking about a little bit before we took the break about some of the educational stuff and writing. And so I know that you just recently contributed to the new magazine that's coming out. You have a book. You've done a lot of writing, so tell me about that.
I write stuff and things.
You write stuff and things.
Things that I drink and eat. So, yeah, I'm really excited about Punch, which is coming out imminently. And for that fantastic nascent publication, I contributed an article about Istanbul cocktail culture, in particular, a place that doesn't really have a name. It's just called Alex's Place or Alex's Bar. And it's right in the heart of the drinking capital of Istanbul, which is Osmanlı Mescit in the Beyoğlu district. So on the European side, not super far from like Galata Tower. And the premise of the article sort of started as there's this guy in Istanbul doing cool, interesting things. And he makes a delicious cocktail in a city that is utterly dominated by bad drinks. Because alcohol is really expensive. So developing a culture requires a lot of money. If you go out on a Saturday night, you can get a, you know, $30 cocktail or whatever it costs, equivalent. And you're not necessarily thinking about the quality. You're thinking about how can this get me as intoxicated as possible for this ridiculous price? So he's doing something really different. And, you know, in the midst of writing the article, a Turkish law was passed, which banned the promotion of alcohol advertising. So beginning in the middle of September, any like craft cocktail bars or vineyards that had a website or a Twitter account or Facebook page had to shut them down.
That's crazy.
It's totally crazy. Already there was a huge obstacle to making drinks in Turkey as it was because the importers and distributors deal almost exclusively with massive brands.
Right.
So they're confined to working with what is imported and produced and imported in mass. So Alex Waldman, who's this fantastic barman, has to make the most of what they give him. So that makes him get really creative. And he's got a lot of guinea pigs who come to his bar and taste, you know, the different cocktails that he invents in order to make the most of what he's able to purchase and import. But with this lack of promotion, I mean, how can a bar survive if they can't even publish, you know, minimal promotion for themselves?
Yeah, even if you, like, even if you wanted to feature one of his cocktails, you know, in any publication in Turkey, you can't do it. That's crazy.
You can't. It's totally illegal.
Man.
That's okay. I'm not afraid. Yes, I'm terrified, actually.
Just do it and see what happens.
I'd rather not. No, this is where it becomes really problematic, because can you not write about, like, pleasure-driven things? Can you not write about, like, simple alcohol consumption? Cocktails are one thing, but wine has been produced in Anatolia for 8,000 years, maybe more.
Yeah.
To not be able to promote something that is, like, totally, utterly indigenous is shocking.
Right.
But the reality.
I mean, it seems to me like, I don't know. I get really uppity about this stuff, but any kind of like political or like religious like influence, which they always have been, mm-hmm. parts of alcohol consumption mm-hmm. and production. I don't know. I'm just like, guys, so let us do our thing.
You
now.
Disagree that the alcohol ban was meant to protect the children's? It's yeah, that's like the government's claim.
Yeah.
It's protecting the babies and the children's.
Oh wow,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I...
Well, on a happier note, what are some of the other projects you've been working on?
So there's some fun things going on. I'm in New York this weekend to do a pizza and Italian craft beer event with Gabriele Bonci, who's like the most important pizzaiolo in Italy, perhaps the world. And then when I go back to Rome, I'm doing this sort of fun and weird event with Andrea De Bellis, who is the leading pastry chef. He just opened his own pastry shop in Rome in March, and he loves adapting other pastry chefs' recipes. So he borrowed the whole like cronut idea, and he made a few cronuts one day and put it on Facebook, which is the only way that Italian people communicate with each other when it comes to businesses like this. So not on the website, on the Facebook account. And he's like, I did this, and it was like this deep fried croissant with sugar on it. And yeah, like it sold out really quick. So then we sort of started talking, like, do we want to do an event together? And I wanted to pair this sort of eggnoggy type cocktail that I had. Eggnog isn't something that I crave in life. It's
but when it happens, you're just so excited about
it. But when it happens, you're like, oh my God, I've been missing everything. I didn't understand anything before this. And during a trip to Austria, I was served eggnog at the end of a disgustingly like cholesterol driven meal. So it was only right to finish it up with a flute of eggnog. And I need the Romans to know about this thing. It's like so perfect and so unlikely, because at the most in Rome, you pair your cornetto or any of your, you pair your cornetto for sure with a coffee mm-hmm. If you're being really extravagant, a cappuccino. But then with your fried foods, you drink beer or maybe some sparkling wine, but, to pair like a cronut inspired thing with eggnog, I think everyone's going to probably either hate it or become obsessed with it. I'm hoping for the latter. We'll see. I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, please do. Keep me posted on your Facebook.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but that's two extremely wildly different parts of the historical like food and beverage world. The eggnog and the cronut. I love that. The juxtaposition is crazy.
You know, when I was thinking about like what could possibly be paired, I was like, okay, maybe I'm just being super biased in favor of this ridiculously awesome eggy thing that I had. But the more I thought about it and then trying, you know, conceptualizing the two together, it's, I think, the only thing that works. And I wanted this event to have a cocktail in it, because I have appointed myself the cocktail evangelist for the English speaking people of Rome. I don't know if anyone appreciates this, but I'm doing my best.
You know what? Something that I've been kind of obsessed with lately, just because it's one of those guilty pleasure drinks, and it's also very like kind of almost dessert driven.
Oh my God, tell me everything.
Just like a lot of people screw this up, but a really, really well made Irish coffee.
Yes.
I mean, I love Café Caretto. I mean, you know, of course. I'm thinking maybe you do some sort of riff on that. You know,
that's cool. Real cool.
But you know, the trick to it is having your whipped cream, like your actual like heavy whipped cream, just like almost ice cold, and then the coffee and in this case maybe grappa part just steaming crazy fiery hot.
Oh my God, you just earned yourself royalties for this event. That's really cool.
But it's one of those drinks that people screw up, you know. I mean,
absolutely. And I think I'm just sort of thinking back on my last Café Caretto in particular, I was like, how could I have drank that? Like, that was like it was an unmarked bottle, but not in like a good way. Not like someone's grandfather made this. It was just like not suitable for human consumption type of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Not good. But, you know, bad memory.
You know, going back to the, the very beginning of the show, when we were talking about, or close to the beginning of the show, when we were talking about the education of, like, kind of like the cocktail thing in the Italian culture, there's one magazine in particular that I've actually contributed to a few times that is printed in both English and Italian. It's La Cucina Italiana, mm-hmm. which is a great magazine.
It's fantastic, yeah.
There's so many cool things that that magazine is capable of publishing, you know, just for having those two markets that are like so into each other.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of potential for like gaining interest in the Italian cocktail thing. As long as it feels authentic.
Yeah.
I think it could fly.
You know, on the flip side of it too, it's like over here and something that I feel like is changing. You know, the way we're talking about this now is that, you know, the kind of more classic driven kind of more spiritous cocktails being produced, mixed up in Rome and in Italy. On the flip side of it over here, we're at the same time starting to get more into the actual traditional ways of drinking vermouth and aperitif, like aperitivo and digestivo, you know, not necessarily, I wouldn't say the digestive part because we have a problem with, you know, slamming shots of Fernet Branca and Averna and Chinon.
I've observed this, yes.
Yeah. You're aware of this?
It's a thing. I've seen it.
Yeah. But definitely as far as the, more specifically with like, you know, classics like the Americano cocktail and, you know, just drinking vermouth on the rocks mm-hmm. or with seltzer. It's a lot of people are, Campari and soda has always been a thing here.
Sure.
But I mean, it's. It's really neat to see that people are actually into vermouth now. And not just
this
like...
This is an amazing thing. This is very good.
Yeah, and it's not just like the Italian, like red vermouth. It's even, you know, you're seeing a lot of people drinking things like Cocchi Americano, you know, anything from like dry to blocked, you know. But like drinking on the rocks with a twist, it's amazing. It's in. It's not about... You know, we have been so excessive over here for so long. Mm-hmm. Now we're like... kind of kicking it back. It's like, all right, just chill out and enjoy this drink. And, you know.
And with like the Amari and stuff, it's so nice to just like sit there and vibe on all the, like the herbaceous notes and things. Yeah. Yeah. I was, I'm very glad to hear that this is going on here because still, when you're at an Italian restaurant or a place in Rome, and your Amaro choices are like Jägermeister, but pronounced Jägermeister. So it sort of sounds interesting, but you're like, that's Jäger. and like Averna, which I love and it's a guilty pleasure, but I was like, you only have Jägermeister and Averna. That's it. It's sort of like your thing, but yeah. No.
Yeah. You know, it's funny too, going back to the vermouth thing, man. And you know, especially, you know, when you would order a martini in Italy, they would pour you martini vermouth. And mm-hmm. over here, you know, you would order a martini cocktail for the longest time and they didn't want any vermouth in it. So it's not necessarily even a martini. It's just funny the way things change that way.
Yeah, and no, it's incredible. And that's why like visiting these two cultures is so interesting because you have to learn like two languages essentially when it comes to cocktails and drinking. The same word can mean two totally different things.
It's amazing.
It means you get to drink more.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of good.
You get to drink all the mistakes that that were
correct.
Made.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very jealous of your lifestyle and everything that you're working on right now. And if I ever find myself in Rome,
we'll go to Barnum. I'll take you out.
Yeah, I would love to. I'd love to. And anytime you're in town, please let me know and come back on the show. And I'd love to hear about whatever it might be that you're working on at the moment.
Right on. Thanks, man.
All right. Katie, it's been great talking to you.
Great talking to you.
All right. That's it for the Speakies today. Check in next week. We'll jabber some more. All right. Cheers.
Save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.